Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing? I mean, nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grief process. You know, with roughly 100 million caregivers in the U.S. and Canada alone, that's about a third of the population. That means that everyone probably knows someone caring for a loved one. They say that there's only three types of people in the world. Those who are caregivers, those who will become caregivers, and those who will someday need a caregiver. I'm talking mothers of special needs and very young children, family members caring for elderly parents, spouses, siblings, or friends caring for disabilities such as Alzheimer's, dementia, cancer, stroke, heart disease, diabetes, multiple sclerosis, muscular dystrophy, AIDS, autoimmune diseases, and a host of others. I can go on and on. Join Dave and his guests now and every Wednesday at noon Pacific time as they discuss avoiding caregiver burnout and surviving grief. So find a comfortable place to relax, kick up your feet, and prepare to feel better and to receive practical tips and tools that you can start using immediately to get you through today and every day so you can survive your tomorrows. But not just survive, but to live life fully and abundantly. Yes, you heard me right. That is a possible goal to achieve. And now, here's your host, Dave Nassani. From Los Angeles, a big LA welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I am Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, coming to you live globally. The famous Blog Talk Radio Network, YouTube, iTunes, the list goes on and on. Yes, folks, I'm the guy who's going to help you and guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving, and we are going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. Yes, we are the champions of helping you to avoid that. Now, we have an exciting show planned for you today, as all our shows are exciting, especially with my lovely co-host Adrian Gruberg, founder of the Caregiver Space. We will be interviewing author Linda Spalla. And we'll be discussing her new book, Catch Your Breath. And we'll be talking about burnout, too. So stay tuned. You do not want to miss this show, folks. And if you are new to the show, we get many new listeners every single week, especially since we've gone video. I am your host, Dave Nassani, and this show is to caregivers of every single kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that they are caring and selfless and sacrificial. And oh, yeah, they got this bad habit about burning out because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. Now, if we would only listen to the airlines, you know, they give us this wonderful advice every time we board a plane. They say, in the unlikely event of an emergency, please put your oxygen mask on first before you help your loved one with their mask. And the airlines know what they're talking about because they've seen people black out when they don't see people put their needs above the needs of loved ones. And you know what? Caregivers are exactly the same way. So we're going to help you out. We also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects it has on us. That automatically throws us into this other thing called the grief process. Ouch. And there's only one way out of the grief process. Anytime you go through loss, you go through it, but you got to go through it. You can't go around it. No shortcuts. Sorry, I wish I had better news for you, but we can help you for your grief and loss if you happen to feel like you're stuck. And I want to take this time to thank last week's guest, Sherry White, registered nurse with the University of Arkansas for Medical Science. And that was a great interview, and you can listen to that interview and all our interviews, especially this one, on our website, caregiverscaregiver.com. That's caregivers with an S and caregiver without an S, because I am the caregiver's caregiver. That makes sense, doesn't it? Anyway, while you're there, take a short quiz to see if you're a candidate for burnout. And just for doing that, because I'm such a nice guy, I'm going to send you my first book that I wrote absolutely free. What a deal. $10 value. And it's called, what is it called? It's called One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships. And it's a story about me and my amazing wife. She makes us normal people look like whiners and complainers. All right, enough of that. Well, Linda, welcome to the show, and thank you so much for being patient and agreeing to this interview and, you know, dealing with all the technical difficulties we had this morning. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
Hey, why don't you take a minute or two and introduce yourself? Just who is Linda Spalla?
Well, Linda Spalla, if I can correct you, if you don't mind.
Spalla
is an Italian
name.
It's an Italian name for shoulder.
Then I got to say Spalla. So it's Spala.
That's
Spala.
right. That's right.
Okay, I got
No,
it.
I'm as southern as a southern belle can be.
Oh, really? You have a nickname, don't you? What do they call you?
That's an inherited name. Really,
Think
no, I don't have a nickname actually, not
about
anymore.
steel magnolias.
Oh, well, yeah, maybe that is one. That's true.
You should
I'm the lo
you
well, let
should
me
read
see
your own bios.
this. I'm the luckiest person in the world because in 1975, I was divorced, jobless, and homeless. And I had been married to a Methodist minister, and he decided to
Oh
leave
my.
marriage. And when that happened, because the Methodist church kept the house, the furniture, the car,
Wait a minute. I thought that
all
was
that.
divorce was against their religion.
Well, anyway, long story short, I came back to Huntsville, Alabama, and took a job at a TV station making $98 a week as a sales secretary. And
Really?
25 years later, was the president and general manager of that television station. And so I had a great
Oh.
career, fabulous career. The TV station was owned by the New York Times Company. And at the time, it was kind of their heyday. And I just had a fabulous career. Then I retired in 2000 and decided to start writing. And the first book I wrote was a leadership book for women. And then my caregiving book, which we're talking about today, because I cared for my mom. And then my latest book is a book on Paris. So I date a
Paris, I
Parisian.
love Paris.
Yes, I date a Parisian and have for the last 12 years. And we go to Paris every summer for 2 months. So, hey, I have a great life. I have a great
Wow.
memory.
You know, Adrienne has a great life too. She's like in the same position as you, and almost she's dating, and you know, her spouse passed away, and you're happy, right, Adrienne?
Very.
You're the luckiest person in the
I miss
world, right?
Steve.
Yeah. Well,
I miss
I
Steve, but
don't.
I'm happy.
I
Well,
wish
I'm so glad.
everybody could. I think it's kind of a fairy tale, a Cinderella story. So for me,
Well,
anyway.
especially the caregivers who, after their caregiver dies or something happens, you know, they just don't even think about dating anymore. They can't get over it. In fact, they can't get over caregiving. They don't know what to do with themselves. Some people just don't know how to stop caregiving. So, I mean, your first question, how did you cope with not being a caregiver? Let's talk about that, because that's a big issue for a lot of people.
With not being a caregiver, you mean after my
Yeah.
mom passed away?
Yes. Was it hard for you to stop caregiving?
Actually, to be very honest, no. My response was one of obvious great grief, but my mom was not her, her life was not a good quality of life. And so it was a combination of grief and relief. And I knew that she died the way she wanted to die. She had always said
Yeah.
she wanted to die in her sleep
That's
peacefully,
a blessing.
and she did. And she lived 8 months longer than they told us that she would. So we had a wonderful 8 months together. And I just knew she was a very spiritual and religious person, the best lady I ever knew. And so I knew she was at peace. She was with my father. So there was a sense of I had done all the things that I felt like I should do. So I had a sense of peace. And I moved on with my life knowing that she was in the place where she wanted to be. So I was, it was an ambivalence for sure. You know, you're sad, but you're also relieved
Sure.
and joyful. And her funeral was a true celebration.
I bet you were really surprised as the months kept going into the 8th month and she's still there and they said she was going to be
No, well,
dead.
that there was the ambivalence, you know, like one day they walked in and said, "Your mom's got 30 days to live. She has this rare form of leukemia that no one had ever heard of. She was 80 years old, so they recommended no chemotherapy." And so I called in hospice, brought her home with me, and You know, we were sitting there literally, and I don't mean this disrespectfully, but we were waiting for her to die because that's what they had told us. And
that's why they call them practicing physicians. They haven't got it down
yet. That's right. That's right. So, you know, the days went into weeks and the weeks went into months. And Mother was the same way. She said, well, I guess I've got more time than we thought. And I said, well, we need to make the best of it. So we tried to.
She didn't suffer that much during that time?
Well, she lost the use of her legs, and so she was in a wheelchair. And my mother was not a complainer, Dave, so I don't know how much she suffered. I would talk to her about it, but she was always looking on the bright side. I had it easy, I think, as caregiving goes, because she was the absolute ideal patient.
Low maintenance,
yes. But
so blessed.
Trying to lift her became a real issue because she wasn't an overweight lady, but she was a tall lady, so she was fairly large, and I'm very small, and so trying to lift her and get her to the bathroom and get her, you know, that's where hospice came in. So it was that part of it was hard, but she lost her appetite. That was hard. Everything tasted like metal to her. She had her moments, but my goodness, you know, I hear all these stories about people who have a very difficult, angry, unappreciative patient to care for. And my mother, she would take my face in her hands at night and say, I love you, precious. Thank you for everything you do. So, you know,
blessing.
Yeah, she was a blessing to me and still is. I miss her terribly, but she's watching me. Every time I see a red bird, I know it's her. Yeah. And hummingbirds, the hummingbird flies around all summer and she loved hummingbirds. So I assume that's her checking in, you know.
So tell me, you're dating and a lot of people, for whatever reason, find it uncomfortable to date, you know, later on in life. How did you guys meet and, you know, what was going through your head? What was going through his head? And why are you guys so happy? I know,
well,
a lot of people would like to know that.
Oh, yeah. Well, we met through a mutual friend who happened to be Bernie's boss. His name is Bernie. Bernard in French. And we... You know, my mother never got to know him. This all happened after Mother had passed away. She would have adored him. We went for a drink, had a glass of wine, and had a glass of wine and enjoyed ourselves, and one thing led to another. He wasn't Mr. Right in my mind, and I almost stopped dating him because he wasn't tall, dark, and handsome, and he wasn't some of the things that I wished he was. But the more I got to know him, the more I realized, hey, this might be the guy I've been looking for a long time. And he is a native Parisian. He left Paris when he was 10. And so, you know, we've been going strong since then.
So you didn't meet in Paris, and have you been to Paris together?
Yes.
No, we didn't meet in Paris. We go to Paris every summer for 2 months.
Okay.
And we basically
live romantic.
There. Yeah. Great. So
I was there for 3 days one time. It was amazing, and it wasn't long enough.
Oh no, you can't do Paris in 3 days. Absolutely.
No.
No.
And you have to find a hotel right in the center of town because traffic sucks.
Yes, it does. It does. Well, we stay in the same apartment. We don't own an apartment, but we do try to rent the same apartment every year. So, and of course, he speaks fluent French. So I'm on Easy Street. I'm on Easy Street when I'm over there. So
I can say merci beaucoup.
Yes.
and au revoir.
Yeah.
What can you say, Adrian?
A petit peu.
Ah, there you go.
Oh, I do know one more, and it's not a nice thing. It's ménage à toi, but it sounds so French, you know.
It is French.
You've been to Paris, haven't you, Adrian?
Oui, my honeymoon, and before with my first husband, yes. But I plan on going for a month. Okay. I would like to go for a month every year. But yes. That's another story.
That's the way to really see it. Yes.
Well, let's get back to caregiving here. What would you say? I mean, I'm reading some of the notes you made. You have a hot chocolate story. Why don't you tell that? I always like a hot chocolate story.
Oh, yes. Well, you know, during the caregiving cycle, I think everybody has moments that they wish they could take back. And because I've laid the groundwork for telling you what a sweet, gentle soul my mother was, I had, she liked to sit in a recliner in my little study area in my home. And I'm one of those crazy people who had white carpet, okay? So it was a cold morning in November, and I had made her a cup of hot chocolate almost immediately after I handed it to her, to dump it all over the recliner and the carpet. Oh. And I kind of freaked out and screamed at her and scolded her. And it was a moment that I'm not proud of, just because my nerves were a bit frayed, and it was, caregiving is an intense business day in, day out, you know. And she was extremely sorry. She cried, and I felt horrible after I had screamed at her. And she was the one apologizing to me, and I finally walked out of the room, and I went back in and kind of got it in perspective. And I said, you know, you don't need to be apologizing to me. I need to be apologizing to you. But you have to forgive yourself and let those moments happen, because they're going to, for everybody. And I made the decision that day to never do that again. And I never did. So
Thank you so much for sharing that. I mean, I know that's not an easy thing to share when we mess up like that. But so many people need to hear that, you know, the best of us mess up, do the wrong thing, do things we are not proud of, and, you know, don't feel very good sharing it with the world like you are right now. But that'll give a lot of people freedom. I mean, how long did you beat yourself up over it?
I let things go pretty quickly. I do. And you know, the book is very candid and very open, a series of devotionals, and that's one of the stories that I share in it. And it's a book that ministers to the emotional needs of people. It's not a disease specific book or anything like that. It's not a medical book. It speaks to the heart, and that's one of the stories. And this is a really interesting point, Dave. I wrote that book. My mother died in 2002. Mm-hmm. That book came out in 2015 or so. Mm-hmm. And why did I wait so long to write the book? Well, the answer is because I was having a little bit of difficulty with my own daughter, my adult daughter. And I yearned for my mother to be around to chat with and to talk to, because we had such a great relationship. And so in order to process the trauma I was having with my own daughter, I decided, well, I'm going to write this book because it's going to speak to my soul and give me some peace and hopefully bring peace to other people. So the book is very, very special. And I dedicated it to my daughter, because if it hadn't been for that situation, I might not have ever written the book. So, you know, things, what goes around kind of comes back around.
Yeah. Why don't you share, you know, some noticeable effects on other family members, you know, like your son or your sister, daughter? How did caregiving affect them?
I guess my son, I'd like to share that with you. He was all for my mother coming to live with me, but then one day they came every weekend, he and his wife from Birmingham, to give me a break. They were both nurses. And because, as I said earlier, mother had lost control of her legs, it was really affecting my back. And my son called me out into a separate room one weekend, and he said, "Mom, you don't need to do this anymore. you're going to have to stop it because it's going to kill you. So he said, let's see about finding a really good assisted care facility where we can put, he called her, I can't even think now what they did call her. I'm sorry. Anyway, his grandmother, Mama, he called her Mama. He said, let's put Mama in a really good assisted care facility. So he was instrumental in getting me to see that maybe I had pushed the limit on what I could do. And of course, we found a spot and it was only 3 minutes down the road from where I lived. And I was there most of the day, but there were other people pulling on her. That. And taking her to the bathroom and getting her from one environment to the next, in and out of her wheelchair. So now the situation with my sister, this one's difficult because I think my sister was, she felt very guilty because she wasn't the one who said, look, I'm going to take mother into my home. She told me, she said, I could never do that. You're crazy for doing it. And my sister is now deceased. And so I mean absolutely no disrespect. But she had a difficult go with me because I think she was, on the one hand, guilty, but on the other hand, a little bit jealous of the fact that I was able to do it and keep my sanity. And then when I decided to move her into an assisted care facility, she felt like I didn't consult with her when, in fact, I had written her a long letter about why I needed to do that. So, you know, if there's a little hiccup in a relationship, it's going to get exacerbated during caregiving. And that's exactly what happened between my sister and myself.
What advice would you give people who know that they can't do it any longer, their back is out and they're, you know, it's not best care for their loved one any longer? And I know, Adrian, you come across this a lot, you know, in your website and
sure.
your people that you speak with. But some people just aren't strong enough to make that lunge. And unless they've got a daughter or a son or a sister that forces them or guilts them into doing it, you know, how do they make that decision? Because it's really a life or death decision. It's either their life or their life. And I was just reading, you know, some comments yesterday about someone. And they're describing, you know, all this stuff. And it's obvious that this needs to be done. He says, I just can't do that. You know, what do you tell people who just can't do that? I mean, how resistant were you when you were told that you need to do that?
I was not resistant because I agreed with my son that I was getting very, very, very tired. But, you know, Dave, I think it's about who you are internally and I'm a very forceful decision maker. Once I make a decision, I move and I don't look back. I think you also have to have a pretty good sense of self-esteem and understand it's okay to take care of yourself. And I knew that I needed to take care of me to be a better caregiver for mother so that those hot chocolate stories wouldn't happen anymore. and so I guess I would say to people, be kind to yourself, you know, forgive yourself, let yourself step back from the situation. In my job as the general manager of a TV station, you know, I was always zooming back the lens and looking down from the 30,000 foot level. And you've got to see the big picture and you've got to be able to take in the vision, the long-term look. And that's kind of what I was doing. Now, my mother was not too happy about the move, and I had to really talk to her about it and assure her that I would be there and there were good people there. I knew the director of this facility, and she gave mother a great big extra dose of TLC. I know she did. Mother made a little bit of an effort to guilt me, but that didn't last very long. And I just didn't accept it. I said, this is what we need to do. This is the best thing. And she ended up being quite happy there. And that is where she finally passed away in that facility.
So what personality or temperament traits would you say that you have that made that decision easier, that maybe someone who did not have those traits would make it almost impossible?
Well, you know, because I've had kind of a rough road in life, I have learned that if I don't take care of me, no one else does. And that's a trait that I have. I like to call it just really good self-esteem, understanding that if mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. And so I try to get myself in a position where I'm okay, and then I can move forward and do the right things. I got a lot of grit. I understand that nothing is the end of the world. You have to make tough decisions. You have to move forward. And after you go to bed and sleep on a decision, it'll be a little bit better the next day and a little bit better the following day after that. I just don't get into a lot of guilt. I don't get into a lot of regret. I don't get into a lot of second guessing of myself. I do the best I can. And if I make a wrong turn, then I turn in the opposite direction and try to correct it. And I guess that's scary for some people, Dave. I don't know. But for me, it's just the way I've had to live my life. And I
Well,
would
Adrian, she
wish.
sounds like the perfect caregiver, doesn't she?
Well,
As far as, having a healthy attitude, I mean,
having a healthy attitude, there are a lot of things that Linda's doing that we wish that everybody could do, yeah. But there are so many people that do feel the guilt and take that on almost
The
above
majority,
everything
right?
else.
The vast
Almost above
majority.
every, yeah.
So you're really an exception, Linda. I mean, what advice have you found works best with your people, Adrian, to convince them to become this person of grit?
It's a process. There's no simple answer to that. I mean, you either have it or you don't. Not really. It's something sometimes you just have to dig to find. But I mean, it doesn't sound like Linda had a very tough time knowing that she'd reached her limit.
Well,
And
I noticed
if
that her
mama ain't
son.
happy, yeah, but her, yes,
I want
but
to know why she waited so long. If her
how
son
I
never
don't
said
know,
anything, if your
and
son
I
never
don't.
said anything, what would have happened eventually? And how long would it have taken, Linda?
Oh, that's a good question. I've never thought about it directly, but I
It
had
sounds
had
like you
a
were kind of waiting a little too long. Maybe you went a little too long in confronting this. So, maybe
maybe
you
so.
weren't, yeah.
Maybe so. Maybe I did wait a little too long. And he's very candid. He's like his mother. We're both very candid people. And it was kind of the knock on the head, I guess, that I needed. And that positioned me to move on. And like I said, my mother resisted it a bit because it frightened her. She
Of
was
course.
comfortable in my home.
And it was
Change.
a confrontation, I would think,
Yeah, it was a
that
bit of a
maybe you,
confrontation.
yeah, that maybe you weren't really excited to rush into. And let's do it
Right.
tomorrow. Let's do it next week. Let's do it next month. And then,
Well,
six months pass.
had you considered the facility before your son can, told you?
I had because I knew the director very, very well, and I knew it was a well-run place. And she had already said something to me about if you need to do something with your mom, know that I'm here. I'll check on her. I'll be very sure she gets excellent care. So, in the back of my mind, but understand, not knowing whether she's going to die tomorrow. Or in 3 months, or in 6 more months, I didn't know.
That's true. You were living on borrowed time.
She was living on borrowed time. That is absolutely
Yeah,
right.
I bet that
So,
was a big part of it too.
well, it created that ongoing ambivalence. That's where, if I had any guilt, it was like one morning I'd wake up and go, okay, when is she going to die? They told
Yeah.
us. 30 days. Now it's been 5 months. And then you'd go, oh my goodness, why are you thinking that way? And so you'd have to snap out of that. So yes, there was some ambivalence there, but you just put one foot in front of the other. And we did some neat things together.
Yeah. Was she on hospice all that time?
She was. And because the day that we got out of the hospital and they had told us that she had no more than 30 days, well, we called in hospice. Well, then they stayed and they stayed and they stayed and they stayed. And they were with her all the way through to the end.
Adrian, what's the longest, I'm sorry for interrupting, Adrian, what's the longest you've ever heard of hospice hanging around waiting for someone to die before they take them off hospice?
I've heard of people being in a hospice facility for like 3+ years or so.
Oh my. Wow.
They were younger people.
But yeah. Not where they're coming into the home.
They were young. They were teenagers actually.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it wasn't as though death was imminent. It was just that hospice care was definitely indicated.
Yes. Right. Dave, I want to say one thing about what you asked earlier about what gave me the ability to make the decision. I think one thing is that I was 56 years old. Some people get hit with becoming a caregiver when they're 40, 45. And I think the older you are, maybe a little bit more settled, a little bit more wisdom, a little bit more in tune with who you really are inside. And so I think that was an asset for me because I was 56. I had just retired. It was like God said, okay, we're going to part the waters. Now you've got time to take care of your mother. And had I been still working, I mean, I had a crazy, crazy job that was 24/7. And almost immediately when I retired, mother found out that she was sick. And so, you know, that's how things work out.
Yeah.
And your son was grown at that point. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. My son was like, he was probably 32.
Okay. Yes. There you go.
Yeah. My daughter. Well,
listen, time is flying. I've got to take a break and we'll come back. We'll talk more about your book. How's that sound?
That sounds great.
One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships, is about Charlene, a stroke survivor. Back in 1996, Charlene was a healthy, normal, very active 52-year-old woman whose amazing talents resemble that of both a Martha Stewart and a Wonder Woman. But all that changed when she suffered a massive stroke that left her severely speech-impaired and paralyzed on the right side. Who am I? My name is David. I've had the privilege of being Charlene's husband since 1975. We had a wonderful, fairy tale, storybook-like courtship that culminated in our marriage a year later. Charlene had just come out of a marriage where after 10 years, she received 2 black eyes and a broken nose by her former husband when he came home high on speed. Charlene believed in no second chances of any kind for abuse, so she left. Finding herself all alone in the world with her 5 and 10-year-old daughters, Cynthia Lorraine and Deborah Lynn, she started raising them by herself for the next 2 years. Then fate brought us all together. After falling in love with Charlene, Cindy, and Debbie, our love then produced Rebecca Elizabeth. We had a wonderful, normal life for the next 20 years. But today, things are very different for everyone. One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships, is the amazing story of a woman's fight to survive all that life had thrown her way. Everyone who knows Charlene is thoroughly amazed at how she lives day by day, month by month, year by year, and with a smile on her face and hope in her heart that everything is going to be okay. Her faith in God is her foundation in this hope, that everything happens for a reason, and what doesn't kill her will make her stronger. She inspires everyone who meets her. Her accomplishments since her stroke are very impressive, often making us normal people look like whiners and complainers. So pick up your copy of One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships today. You won't be disappointed. Just hear what best-selling author Lynn Barrington has to say about it. If you think you have it bad, read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you'll be able to look at your concerns in a new light. How about the reaction of 9-time Grammy and Dove Award recipient, the godfather of contemporary gospel Christian music,